Hey everyone, welcome to the Period Party. I'm Nicole.
Hi everybody, I'm Nat.
And on this episode, we're talking to Kelsey Knight of the Fifth Vital Sign, and the topic is conversations with our bodies. Kelsey is a labor and delivery registered nurse in New York City, and she trained and volunteered as a birth doula, which opened her eyes to the imperatives of informed consent and health as a human right. She then pursued a nursing career in inpatient obstetrics, and she is a certified lactation consultant and childbirth educator. Welcome to the show, Kelsey.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yes, we're very excited to have you. So I guess we should just jump right in and talk a little bit about the fifth vital sign, because I feel like you guys have taken the whole women's health arena by storm last year. And I think it would be great to just share a little bit about what that means. What is the fifth vital sign? I don't even think women realize what that is.
Yeah. So, Emily is also part of the Fifth Vital Sign. We initiated.
I should have mentioned that.
No, yes, that's okay. Yeah, she's a doula, and we initiated this project together. And Emily had read Sweetening the Pill by Holly Griggsball and felt really inspired by Holly's book. And it's kind of a cultural study of the pill and how it's been used in the United States, and the fact that the majority of women will be on hormonal birth control at some point in their lives. And we ended up talking to Holly on our podcast. And Emily told her about this idea we had for a project talking about informed choice and body literacy. And Emily and I's backgrounds are in childbirth. She's a doula and I was a labor and delivery nurse. And we were seeing that women weren't always presented with all of their options, and that they weren't then able to make truly informed choices about their care. And we thought, we were thinking about a project we could do together, and we were thinking maybe we'll do it, something about childbirth education. But we realized that a lot of this, we needed to reach women a lot earlier than childbirth and pregnancy. And we thought about the menstrual cycle. And we thought about how it's like a vital sign. That's how much information it can tell you about your body. You know, the other vital signs are blood pressure and heart rate, respiratory rate, temperature. And we read a recommendation and kind of an opinion piece by the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, where they said they recommended that the menstrual cycle be treated as a vital sign for adolescents. And that made so much sense to us. I know it probably makes sense to you all too, that it's an indicator of health. So that's why we called it the fifth vital sign, sort of in addition to those four main vital signs.
I think it's the coolest thing ever, by the way, that our periods are our fifth vital sign, and that it's finally being recognized as that.
Exactly. Yeah. I feel like there has been a big shift this year. Lots of, menstruation awareness and body literacy talk going on. It's really exciting that we're a part of that.
Yeah,
I agree. I think there has been a big change in awareness, and I think that I find it quite hilarious because for so long, a lot of women have, for lack of a better description, poo-pooed periods, and that we're all hippies out here with this, way out idea that we can find out so much information and menstrual cycles and all of that. And now all of a sudden it's kind of done this whole 360 where we're all of a sudden interested in it. I can't help but feel a little bit, like I've been mute. I'm sure some of you feel the same, but that's okay because the information is getting out there. I understand you guys have been traveling around the country earlier this year. I'd love to hear a little bit more about where you were and what you were teaching people.
And what you discovered about women who aren't in the period bubble.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. So from, let's see, March, we started March 2nd and we drove across the U.S. for 3 months. We drove 15,000 miles and went to 43 states and gave these classes, these free health classes in over 60 locations. And we were talking about the menstrual cycle. We were talking about fertility awareness, both as a form of contraception, but also just as a way to get to know yourself. We like to talk about our own bodies first, and then second, we talk about them in relation to anyone else. And I feel like that's what was really missing, at least from my sex education in middle school. And then we also, a big emphasis is also on informed choice. So, you know, how to make an informed choice, how, you know, what questions to ask your healthcare provider in order to have an effective conversation and know your options and be able to make a choice with the information that's most important to you. In terms of what we learned, oh man, we learned so many things. I mean, from, you know, we got to stay with strangers who quickly became friends on the trip. And so people were so incredibly generous, opening up their homes to us. And not that I didn't think Americans were generous in that way and really hospitable, but it was just, yeah, that was so inspiring. We got to see how so many different families love each other every single day. And then just in terms of, you know, the work that we did, we kept hearing from women that, you know, they were so grateful that this information was becoming available. We heard a lot of frustration and sadness that, you know, people, you know, I hadn't heard this information before. I experienced that myself. I went to an all-girls school in high school and went to nursing school and wasn't aware of fertility awareness until a couple months before we did the trip. And that was my first exposure. And I think that can be really, really frustrating.
For so many women. I mean, Nat and I hear this all the time mm-hmm. from women who, I mean, even in their 40s and 50s, who have never been exposed to this kind of information before. And that's what I was curious about, whether you'd sense that on your travels. And clearly it's a cross country, across the world kind of situation happening where women just don't feel like they're getting the information that they need. And mm-hmm. it brings me into what you talked about informed choice. And I've obviously had a number of conversations with you and Emily about this, and this idea that women, especially when they're in labor, don't get all of the information, or doctors sort of bulldoze their way through and do procedures or do things without actual consent. Mm-hmm. I'd love for you to speak to that, because I feel like this is a growing problem and I didn't know about it until you guys told me about it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think, you know, coming in labor, that's probably one of the hardest times to, you know, you might be feeling vulnerable. And it's such a hard time to find that voice to ask more questions, especially if, you know, options aren't being presented to you. We knew that these conversations needed to happen earlier, that we wanted to help women kind of find that confidence and find that voice and know their rights before, like way before they got into the delivery room and we're in that kind of more vulnerable state. So we always talk about knowing your rights in our class. You have the right to say no. You always have the right to ask for a second opinion, to ask more questions, to ask what the risks, side effects, and benefits and alternatives are to whatever is being discussed. So that, yeah, that was huge for us.
I love that, because so many women are afraid to ask. I think so many women don't, first of all, understand their cycle and mm-hmm. don't understand their body, and then fear the worst. I know yesterday I had to go to my accountant. I hate going to the accountant. I don't understand it. I freak out. I spent the whole day feeling nauseous. Oh. And it occurred to me that's probably how a lot of women feel when they're coming to my clinic, because they don't understand their body and they're freaking out. And it was a good reminder to me. I was like, just chill out. Like, seriously, mm-hmm. how bad can it actually be? And once I understand what my accountant is actually telling me, it's actually not that bad at all. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a good reminder that no matter what it is, there's a reason that your body's doing something. There's mm-hmm. a sign and symptom for every problem that is very clearly handed to you. And, you know, if we, rather than fear it, we understand it, it's all of a sudden, it's just a fact. Not that scary, and do what we need to do to address it and understand it and live a little bit happier once we know.
Yeah, definitely. I totally agree. I think, you know, education is, or knowledge is power, and it also gives people confidence. It makes you feel more in control. And I hope, you know, we always hoped that people walked away from our classes feeling like their bodies had worth and feeling like they had this framework with which to go to their providers and ask more questions, because we can't, you know, we can't cover everything in our 2-hour classes. And, you know, I think another important part of it too, especially in the labor and delivery room. And also we preface the informed choice section of our classes this way by saying that, you know, our opinions don't belong in this space. When we're talking about informed choice, we're talking about facts, and we trust you all to make the best decisions for your body. And we're just here to give you information so that you can go and do that.
I guess a lot of our listeners understand on fundamentally on some level, understand their cycles, and we're not necessarily talking to people that have zero idea. And I guess a lot of the women that you're going out there to educate, you know, some of this information is new. So I'm keen to talk a little bit more, however, about breast awareness, because yeah. I would love to understand a little bit more about what you're teaching around breast awareness and especially, you know, the new guidelines for self-examination. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Definitely. Yeah. We usually talk about how most people our age were taught to be breast aware through self-breast exams. So, you know, you might have learned like to do an exam once a month. It was very prescriptive, and a few studies were done in the early 2000s, and one of them compared two groups of people. One group of people performed self-breast exams regularly, and the other group of people didn't, and they found that their breast cancer mortality rates were the same, and that actually the group that had performed self-breast exams regularly, they were biopsied twice as often, and a lot of those results were coming back benign. So that was,
and of course there's a risk with the way that we're checking for that too. You know, if we're having a mammogram, we know that there's associated risk with that now. It's not sort of something that I know my doctor doesn't advocate for them, that we're sent for, I'm sent for an ultrasound before I'll be sent for a mammogram. But it's interesting that you say that, and I've always had that thought, especially someone like myself, I have quite lumpy breasts anyway. So yeah. Any given moment I could totally be freaking out, and I just go to my doctor and say, could you please just, you know, every now and again have a bit of a feel. I don't know how to properly check my breasts. I guess if there was something out of the ordinary, I'd probably notice that it was there. But yeah, it's sometimes too much emphasis on something can actually not necessarily take us where we want to go, I guess.
I agree. I think that the focus on pathology with self-breast exams, it caused people to find something that was wrong sometimes too. So like if you're looking for something that's wrong, it's more likely that you're going to find it. I think what's cool about the new recommendation of breast awareness, I mean, it's still sort of vague. And I think that's, you know, we were hoping that a self-breast exam in the 70s would be like a low-cost, low-tech way to decrease breast cancer mortality. But I think now with the new recommendation of breast awareness, they're emphasizing knowing you're normal, and then you would be better able to, you know, to notice if anything were abnormal.
I feel like that goes for the periods as well. Know you're normal. Because everyone else's normal is completely different to your normal.
Yeah, exactly. And Nicole, I remember when you came to our class, I think another interesting part of breast awareness that we talk about is how, you know, pain in general around the menstrual cycle, I think, is really normalized. And yes. We talk about breast pain a lot. Even in my nursing book, when I was researching like how to teach this breast awareness section, it said breast discomfort was common. It didn't say it was normal, but it said it was common. And that reminded me of something I've read on your website, which is, you know, that menstrual cramps might be statistically normal, but not physiologically normal. And that is similar to breast pain, and that, you know, a sense of fullness maybe a week before the cycle is normal, but pain might be an indication that your hormones are imbalanced. Maybe there's too much estrogen, and I know, you know, you've recommended less caffeine, and I learned a lot from you during that class too.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I know there's so much women can do, and I think that it comes back to what you were saying now and what we always say, that if you don't know, you're going to be automatically scared of it. It's like, feels like this big black hole and you're just staring down into it. And then, you know, it also feels for women too, like they don't have any control. Mm-hmm. And
that's our goal, I think, for all of us, is to re-empower women with this information so that they can feel like they can be trusted with their own healthcare. Because I think that women from a really young age now are almost stripped of that. And we start to put our trust and belief in a doctor or some kind of other practitioner to quote unquote fix us or heal us. And ultimately that never works because nobody can actually fix us. I mean, they can facilitate. But if we don't know what our normal is or what symptoms don't seem right, there's no way for anyone else to know. And I think that that, again, perpetuates a lot of this mistrust in the medical community. And it also perpetuates women continually feeling like they're not being heard.
Right.
They can't really advocate for themselves effectively.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I think, you know, we are the authorities on our body. And oftentimes in the class too, we talk about having like a circle of practitioners, that your MD doesn't have to be the only person you go to for support, that, you know, you might have like your abdominal massage therapist or your nutritionist or anyone else in that works in holistic healthcare can be there for you too. I think sometimes we forget that.
It's about that, but it's also about finding people that you resonate with. You know, I know when my son was diagnosed with cystic fibrosis, I was actually had the most amount of trust in my chiropractor because he had dealt with it before. He was able to be, he listened to me and I was able to bounce ideas off him. And it wasn't about his Geordie's spinal care as such. It was more about the vitamins and minerals and what I was giving him. And so it doesn't, you know, you might find the answers in the most unlikely place, but I think when you're open to exploring that and you can find your tribe of healthcare practitioners that understand you, that is another level to healthcare, I believe, other than just, you know, taking it for granted. I'd love to hear how you, you know, help women to advocate not only for themselves, but how do you speak to other healthcare professionals when you are wanting to do something, but you're kind of butting heads?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. And I know that it was hard sometimes on the trip because, you know, we traveled to some smaller communities where really, like, there really only was one option for a healthcare provider. I know that in Alabama, they only have two nurse midwives in the, two nurse midwives in the whole state. And that,
really?
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
How big is Alabama?
It's pretty big, Nat. That's the problem. That's the problem.
Like, this blows my mind because if I haven't been somewhere, I don't really know a lot about places. If I haven't been there, I'm not very good with geography. But like, I just didn't imagine that it was like a four person town.
Yeah. No.
It's a big state.
Kind of got that. That's where I was. That's why I'm like blown away. But yep. It just goes to show that, you know, that healthcare in some places, even though it might be a big area, is potentially lacking when it comes to complementary support. Complementary isn't supposed to be, you know, the other side of or some wacky way of dealing with something. It's just to complement what else is going on.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and so that was part of the challenge. Like when we were in those communities, it was really about, yeah, like how do you then go to your healthcare provider? And it would often come up with fertility awareness discussions. We'd hear stories when people, you know, had told us that they had told their doctors, "I'd like to practice fertility awareness as my form of contraception," and their doctor would give them their opinion and say something inappropriate, like, "I'll see you in 9 months when you're pregnant."
That's just a cop-out because they don't know how to teach it.
Right. Well, yeah. And it's hard too if you have only a 15-minute appointment scheduled with someone. It's, you know, that makes it difficult too, I think, for the healthcare provider. But yeah, I think that's a good question. Like, what can you do in that situation? And oftentimes we would really encourage people to bring their own information, that if they can, to do their homework beforehand, and then to ask specific questions. And so those, you know, things like, what are the risks? What are the benefits? What are the side effects? And what are the alternatives? And then to bring in your own information too, and kind of double check what your provider is telling you, and knowing that if you can, if you're able, if that's accessible to you, you can get a second opinion too, that's your right.
What do you say to women who are scared of doing that, that feel like it's a full-time job to manage their bodies and the symptoms?
Yeah, that's a lot. I think especially if you're doing that, you know, if you're working with a healthcare provider that isn't making you feel very heard, you can always, if you, you know, if a support person can come with you, like a patient advocate can be a really good idea. You know, Emily is also like a birth control doula, and she can be there for people informationally, spiritually, emotionally.
Can you tell us about that? Like what exactly a birth control doula is? Because I, until you guys had told me that term, I'd never actually heard it before, but it sounds really cool.
Yeah, I don't. So as far as I know, Emily is the one that coined the term, which is pretty cool. So a doula actually means servant in Greek, which is, anyway, I hope that changes one day, but
I think you're going to be going hard to try and change the Greek language, but I get what you mean.
Yeah, I know, it's so funny.
Thank you, I love it.
Yeah, so usually when we hear the word doula, most people associate it with pregnancy and like a birth doula. So someone who gets to know you usually prenatally, they have meetings with you. You talk about non-pharmacological pain interventions and all sorts of things, and they're there for you physically and emotionally, informationally, mentally, spiritually. And Emily just realized that's after reading Sweetening the Pill, Holly Griggsfall's book, and Holly, you know, shares her own personal experience about coming off the pill and how kind of scary it was for her and how big of a transition it was, and that she's not the only one that's experienced that. So Emily realized that, you know, people needed support during this transition. I mean, pregnancy and labor, it's all a transition too. So she just thought about the concept of a birth control doula. Someone who can support you, even if, you know, coming off of hormonal birth control or going from one form of birth control to the next. If you have questions, if you need more information, if you feel like you need emotional support and just someone to check in with, then that's what she's there for.
That is awesome. I feel like so many women need an advocate on for so many different scenarios with a doctor, whether it's around birth control or just not really understanding their rights or understanding what the doctor has actually said.
I think it's scary. I mean, and if you've been on, I was on the pill for 6 years. I mean, it was a transition for me coming off. I ended up like coming off, going back on, then coming off again. And yeah, I think it would have been great to have someone by my side. And it can be a real emotional roller coaster too, as you all know, not just physical.
Oh my gosh, for sure. I mean, I remember that getting off the birth control pill. I kind of just winged it. I had no idea what the heck I was doing. And of course, back then, there really wasn't anything on the internet about it. Right. So long ago.
We're lucky now that there is a lot more information and it's not such a, you know, foreign thing to do. But, you know, I think that is interesting because a lot of women would be scared to do that. There'll be a lot of women that would go to their doctor and say, I'd like to come off the pill. Maybe they'd be talked out of it for whatever reason, because it's much easier to, stay on it than actually fix the hormone imbalance. Well, at least you're led to believe that because your doctor may not have a solution for you to fix that, even though that's not necessarily the case. So I know that you're advocating for women to make informed choices. Mm-hmm. And do you want to talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I guess kind of coming off of this contraception discussion too, like that's something that we really like to make clear during our classes is that we're not anti- like hormonal contraception, we're pro informed choice. And I think another important part of making an informed choice is just also, it's not only like knowing your options and then asking specific questions about each option. I think it's also kind of asking yourself personal questions, like what do I value and what's important to me in terms of contraception, which is usually when we talk about informed choice in our class. So asking yourself, like, is it price that's important to me? Is it convenience? Is it, you know, the mode? Do I want to take a pill? Do I want something that's more permanent? Is it STI protection? You know, asking yourself those personal questions, and then even going deeper than that and asking myself, okay, if that's important to me, then why is it important to me? And yeah, I think sometimes that's often that personal side of things is sometimes forgotten in the informed choice conversation, and it can be just as valuable.
No, I love that. And I think that, you know, I think the more information, it's all about information, isn't it, really, at the end of, and that's why we do what we do. Nicole and I sit here and we talk to people because, A, you know, don't just take our word for it. Let's talk to experts. B, it's all about, you know, not bullying people. We're not here to preach to people. We're not telling people what they need to do. We're giving them information so that they can go away and sit with it and work out what's right for them. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what you guys are trying to do as well, which I absolutely love. I know we're out of time, but mm-hmm. I would love for you to let our listeners know where they could find you so that they can tap into more of your amazing information and resources.
Yeah, thank you. So we're on Facebook as the Fifth Vital Sign. It's all letters. FIFTH, and also on Instagram under the same name, and Twitter. Our website is 5thvitalsign.com. Our Gmail is thefifthvitalsign@gmail.com. That's all letters.
Perfect. Easy. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been really awesome to talk to you about, you know, things that we're very passionate about as well. So it's always good to have more of us together to help create that awareness. For our listeners that want more of this information, go and check out the girls' website, but you can also jump over to the Period Party website or on iTunes and listen to more of our podcasts. And of course, whilst you're there, please take a few seconds to rate the podcast so that we can keep on keeping on. Until next time, though, I'm going to say bye to you girls, and we'll be back for more in our next episode. Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Kelsey.